Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Joining me tonight as co-host is Dean Johnson.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, we revisit the Americans with Disability Act and its California relative, the UNRRA Act. These acts create frameworks for ensuring that every American has access to public and private spaces. But are these important laws being abused, Jeff?
And that is the question, Dean. Recent media reports are replete with reports of a very few individuals sending out letters or filing lawsuits against numerous small businesses. The Americans with Disabilities Act created a necessary and common sense framework to help remove barriers and ensure every American has access to public and private spaces. Few reasonable people would disagree. But while ADA and UNRRA Act reform advocates in the business community would argue that, unlike similar laws, when businesses are out of compliance with accessibility rules, there's no grace period. There's no opportunity for them to fix problems with their properties. And as a result, well-intentioned small business owners are targeted with predatory lawsuits that don't allow them to make changes to their stores or workplaces before they get buried with legal fees. Disability advocates counter that these bills to correct or remedy the situation undermine the purpose of the landmark civil rights law, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and harm people with disabilities. Dean?
Tonight, we're happy to revisit these important issues. We've invited some outstanding guests to help us sort out some of these complex legal issues. And of course, our most important guest is you, our listener.
There's much to discuss. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. And bear in mind that neither our attorney guests or non-attorney guests can any more provide you with with precise legal advice without all the facts relating to a given case than your doctor can diagnose your family member based on a phone call. However, we're happy to pass along the legal principles to help assist you in your decision-making. Their guidance mightn't be the same positions as that of their employers or clients, but they're here to help. Again, our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Or if you're out of the area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255.
And joining us tonight, Redwood City Attorney Catherine Moore has more than 30 years' experience and is well-versed in the representation for ADA violations. And Frederick Lustenberger is a Certified Access Specialist, or CASP, one of about 800 in the state of California. And he is also the chief building official for San Mateo County.
Also joining us, Tony Hahn is the operations manager at Taipan Restaurant in Palo Alto. Tony spearheaded the creation of the Bay Area Small Business Coalition, which joins businesses together to fight as a group against serial litigants and at the same time helping businesses throughout the process of making their spaces ADA compliant to better serve the community. Well-versed in these issues, Mr. Hahn joins us tonight as a spokesperson for small businesses. And I would be remiss if I were not to mention the myriad political officials, both elected and appointed, and disability rights advocates that we invited to join us tonight who were either unavailable or declined to attend. But we have a most outstanding panel with us tonight. And with that, Tony, Fred, Kate, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks for having me.
You know, this abuse has been going on for years. About 5 years ago, a San Diego lawyer filed several suits against local businesses. A local news entity took some 8 different complaints he'd filed against local businesses, laid them side by side, compared them. Word for word, identical allegations in each. Followed up with a local CASP inspector who one by one checked out the locations and found these allegations unfounded. So let me start the discussion with Tony. You know, Tony, over the last few years, there seems to have been a great flood of these cases, especially in the Mid-Peninsula and in the South Bay, but it appears to be a statewide phenomenon. Has this been the experience of local businesses, and are businesses particularly vulnerable now?
Yes, absolutely. For my experience, we started noticing this late last year. I believe we were hit late July, and we started looking up Pacer, which is a website where you can look up existing lawsuits. We found hundreds upon hundreds of similar lawsuits against small businesses, and some of them are just our neighbors right down the street. And we found that everyone has been experiencing similar problems, and we started chatting. And, you know, during that time, we just came out of the heat of the pandemic. We are at the highest profitability that we could at that time. So everyone thought it would be smooth sailing from then. But then we got hit with this. It's another hassle for sure. Besides taking care of a business, taking care of loved ones who have been affected by COVID. So it's been a lot.
Hey, Tony, now you use the word hit. Tell us exactly what happens when one of these suits begins. Does somebody come to your facility, or do you just get slapped with legal papers? What happens?
Well, there are three or four scenarios where someone will be heard they were sued by this. For us, it was just a normal day. My little brother, who's 17 at the time, was working in front of the house. All of a sudden, this person just showed up with a 50-pager document saying, here you go, you've been served. So I obviously freaked him out. But we looked this up right after and I found, oh, there's actually more people like us who are being served or something like that. And there's another common scenario where businesses would just get solicitation letters from defense law firms claiming that they will help them to defend against these ADA lawsuits. And that's a sure thing to kind of get people into the mindset that, oh, something might be wrong. But a lot of people take them as scams or spams and just throw them out.
Let's take a step back. I'd like to know if any of our guests would like to be the one to step up and give us a brief overview of just what is the ADA. Kate?
Absolutely. So it's important to recognize that when we're talking about the ADA, which is abbreviated for the Americans with Disabilities Act, there's actually two different statutes at play. There's both the federal statute called the Americans with Disabilities Act, and then also the UNRUH Act that you alluded to in your introduction, which is California's version with some similarities, but one very distinctive difference. And basically, it's a civil rights law that prohibits discrimination against individuals, with disabilities in all areas of public life. For example, that includes jobs, schools, transportation, and all other places open to the general public, including digital assets such as website applications. So in short, it was modeled after the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to prohibit discrimination and provide equal opportunity for all people.
And I think we all agree that that's a good idea, but it went in a different direction, right, Fred?
Well, one of the problems is my understanding is the ADA relies on two enforcement mechanisms. One is the Department of Justice, and that's usually for large concerns, such as big box stores or a city or a state, something that's large in scope. The Department of Justice is not going to come after 7-Eleven on the corner. But the other enforcement mechanism that is kind of baked into the cake is civil action. You leave it to people to take civil action against a business or other concern that isn't meeting the ADA regulations. So that may have something to do with why we see this plethora of lawsuits happening out there. There's not like in the state of California, we rely on the California regulations has enforced through the building codes to enforce these regulations. But that only gets triggered when there's work being done, a new building being constructed or an existing building being renovated. And within certain trigger amounts that are considered reasonable to undertake. And that's why you see a lot of these actions being taken down on the main street for smaller businesses, because it's easier for folks so inclined to take action against them.
You know, Fred, before you're off the hook, I want to throw something back at you. In pointing out that laws related to the ADA are updated perhaps more frequently than our building codes, numerous city planning officials or building officials I've spoken to in the last few days preparing for the show have advised that businesses should hire a certified access specialist or a CASP inspector, as you described them, to review their businesses for accessibility issues. Can you take a moment and explain to the listeners what a CASP inspector is and what's their role?
Okay, well, just to back up just a little bit, 10 or more years ago, there was a lot of differences and inconsistencies between the California Building Code, specifically Chapter 11B, which is the situations we're talking about, not housing so much, and the ADA regulations, or ADAG, they're otherwise called, which are the technical regulations, you know, how wide a door has to be, how large a parking place, signage, those kinds of things. Over the last 10 years, they've been very closely aligned to where the California Building Code regulations, as they apply to building, are almost completely identical to ADA Title III, which is what applies to public accommodations. So if you comply with the California Building Code in that regard, you are safe as far as the ADA is concerned. So having said that, CASP is a program that was initiated by the state of California in 2008 as a product of what was called SB 1608, the enabling legislation, which commenced the state architect to set up a program whereby people could voluntarily become certified if they met certain criteria. They were experienced, they had knowledge and skills germane to looking at accessibility issues as they apply to the built environment. It's important to note ADA has several different titles, Title 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. The ones that we're kind of focused on more or less here would be either 2, which would be for local business or local government entity, or Title 3, which is what our guest Tony would be representative of, which is businesses, places of public accommodation. And so this was established by the state of California going back about 14, 15 years ago now to address the issue that we're talking about tonight. Rampant, you know, lawsuits, frivolous lawsuits against businesses, all these things that were happening. It was the state's way, at least at the state court level, to address this situation by a more proactive approach and having people that are certified, as I am, to go out, look at a business, and identify areas of concern or discrepancies and come up with reasonable ways that they can overcome those. Depending, and there's a lot of variation, how old the building is, the topography, if you're on a hill in San Francisco as opposed to a flat area, much more difficult, things like that. So some things can be accepted. Some things are not technically feasible. Other things are not readily achievable. So there's a lot of different terminology and a lot of different technical aspects to this. But in a nutshell, what we do is go out, assess the specific facility, the building or so forth, and come up with a list and recommendations and requirements. And then the business owner at that point can choose to hire a design professional and or a contractor, execute those repairs, and in some case, perhaps, if they're smaller, even him or herself, and then call us back. We come out and we can certify it as meeting all applicable regulations that apply to that building. And they get a an access placard that they can, if they want, display in the front window where people enter and exit and so forth, or they can put it in their files. And then should somebody take action against them, at least at the state court level, and they have evidence that they've made all things that they have to do. And what's important about that is you may have an older business, and even when the CAST process is done and you're certified, somebody who might think that he or she knows something about ADA laws might go in there and say, oh, this door is too small, I'm going to sue this person. When in fact, the CAST might have determined that it was technically infeasible to make that door larger without basically a $400,000 renovation. So things like that can come up. They're nuances. But actually showing that you've been certified, and from what I've heard, is a good deterrent for a business owner. So that's so kind of what the process is.
Kate, let me ask you, you know, Tony described himself and some of his neighboring businesses as being hit. This is a pretty organized thing, isn't it? I mean, it's not just some random customer that comes in and says, oh, I couldn't get access to the restroom. It's actually a very systematic thing that small business owners are facing now. How does this work?
Yeah, absolutely, Dean. It's a very organized system that involves what I would refer to as some serial plaintiffs, being someone who qualifies as someone with a disability, which the ADA laws are designed to protect. And I don't know how exactly it works, but I know the outcome is that that particular individual will attempt to patronize a particular business, no matter what it is, a gas station, a restaurant, a jewelry store, you pick it. And soon after that, the business owner finds out about being sued, as Tony was referring to. Either they are sued but receive the papers, being sued and served at that moment in time, or there are some defense attorneys who are looking at the filings and will solicit basically business of a person, advising them, hey, you are being sued. But there's a real motivation for this, and it's driven by, I'm just going to be honest, it's driven by money. So you'll have an individual, or I can come up with at least three or four names right now that are all represented by the same law firm that does this volume business. And of course, we all agree that making sure disabled people have equal access to property is extremely important, but it's also important to balance the interests of the disabled with small business owners. And the problem, and why this seems to be such a huge problem, is it's motivated by financial gain. So unlike, as I mentioned earlier, there's both the federal statute and there's the California UNRUH Act. And if you have a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, you automatically have violated the California UNRUH Act. And the reason that is important is because the laws, the remedies for both of them are similar with one significant change. If you violate the Americans with Disabilities Act, which means you've also violated the UNRUH Act, the remedy for the person who is alleging they were denied equal access is that you, the business owner, have to pay for that individual's attorney's fees and costs to sue you. And you also have to basically fix the problem, bring the property compliant with the various regulations that Fred was referring to earlier. the key difference between the ADA and the UNRUH Act is that the UNRUH Act adds one other element to the remedy, which is called statutory damages. So laid out right in the statute, if you are in violation of the ADA, well, you not only have to pay for the attorney's fees and costs for the person who's suing you, fix the problem, but that person who is claiming they were denied access to your property is also entitled to either three times their actual damages or a minimum of $4,000.
Wow. So if I understand, and we're hearing a lot of horror stories about this, if I understand it, they don't even have to be customers at the establishment. Like, they can drive by and say, oh, the parking lot doesn't comply, and the next thing you know, you're sued. Is that accurate?
No, that's not entirely accurate. At least in my experience, in the cases that I have handled, which is quite a few, the person alleging the violation attempts to patronize the business, and in the process, there's something called General Order 56 in the federal court, which requires the parties to exchange their initial disclosures. And those are the documents, variously, that are like their discovery that you're going to produce and show the other individual you have. And inevitably, there are photographs that include the plaintiff attempting or driving by or it being seen somehow or some way at that property. And then subsequently, what happens is an investigator comes to the property and starts measuring and taking all kinds of photographs. So theoretically, yes, they have to be a patron of your business. This is coming up a lot with website accessibility, which is not an area that I am familiar with too much, but generally that the, you know, for example, a hotel chain and a disabled person alleges that they were denied accessibility to the reservations line or through their website. And it turns out they weren't actually even trying to book a room. I mean, that seems to be the hot topic with website accessibility. But the cases that I'm handling are the Title III public accommodation types of cases. So it's the statutory damages that is the motivator here, alongside with the fact that you're going to get your attorney's fees back. But it's really the statutory damages. In only one case that I've handled, was there actually any sort of physical, actual injury, bodily injury. Every other one of them is, you know, the allegation that it was embarrassing, there was uncomfortableness, there's no physical, you know, harm to the body. So generally, you're looking at $4,000 each time. So if that person alleges they came to your property three times, well, that's 4,000 times three, which is $12,000. Now, of course, there's some.
That's quite a hit. I think we want to continue with this, but I think we have to stop and let the station try to pay the rent. Jeff?
And that's a good point, Dean. KALW and Your Legal Rights has been sharing legal information with listeners for some 40 years. If you listen to KALW and you've never become a member, please consider joining KALW right now. You decide the amount you want to give at any level. You make a difference, and you're changing your relationship to this resource that you value. A broad membership base is the foundation for everything KALW does, and we want to grow that foundation. That's why it's so important for new people to join local public radio. Each public radio station is an independent entity, so if you supported another public radio station, whether here or another city, that's great. But if you're in the Bay Area listening here, now is the time to join up and be a participant in local public radio. Help us continue providing this tremendous resource either by calling 1-800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org/donate. And thank you. And Kate, one of the things that I wanted to run by you, and perhaps Tony wants to join in on this also, it appears that from what you're telling us, that these people really did, these plaintiffs, I should say, really did go to these businesses most of the time. But it seems ripe for anybody who wants to go into an area where the buildings tend to be 100 years old, 90 years old, and go from one to the next with no idea of doing anything other than harvesting the lawsuits. Is there anything in place to help filter this out?
Yeah, Jeff, that's exactly how it does appear. And as I said, in my experience, I am defending a number of cases that they do seem to fall into that pattern. Now, as I said, in my experience, there is documentation or at least evidence in some respect that the individual suing has attempted to get to the property or the business, I should say. But the statute is simply written, and when I say the statute, I'm referring to the UNRU Act, which actually predates the Americans with Disabilities Act. But the way that it's written so that it can be extremely abused, and it has clearly been used, and it's legal what's happening, but it equates almost to legal shakedown. Because if you've got a violation, there isn't a whole lot you can do to defend yourself. It almost is, you know, like strict liability. Like think of, in the state of California, you get bit by a dog. Well, you know what? You're the dog owner. You're automatically liable to the person who your dog bit. And so this is similar to that, wherein you have a violation, boom, you've already lost. There isn't really much to do to defend yourself other than to get out of the case as quickly as possible. The only way to protect yourself against any of these lawsuits is, as Fred has been talking about earlier, is to make sure that your property is compliant. And so this would be, you know, the best means that you can is to get a CASP inspector out there, have them take a look at it, and bring the property compliant to protect yourself.
Okay, Tony. Yeah, Tony, I want to ask you about that. $12,000 sounds like a heck of a hit for a small business coming out of the pandemic. Mm. You, small business people like yourself are starting to give pushback on this, aren't they?
Yeah, well, 12,000 is the smaller number that we heard. It goes up to 25. But again, from a business standpoint, we just feel like this is another business to us. There are mechanisms, and you know, some might call this a cottage industry that has multiple parties that can benefit from this. And obviously, from a business standpoint, we're going to look at how much it's going to potentially cost us. Does it cost more to settle, or does it cost more to defend ourselves?
And Tony, we'll get back to that in just a moment. I want to come back to you just after the break, but we do have to take a break for station ID. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
You know, Tony, you were just talking about what this means to businesses, and I want to hand it back to you to finish that thought. But before you do, I want to throw another element to it. When we hear about businesses, it's not all brand new construction of a national chain. The people that are really getting hurt are largely very small local businesses, many of whom don't even own the premises. They're renting the space to get started in buildings that are sometimes 20, 40, 100 years old and more. And they think they're ready. They open the doors, not realizing that something that may have been present for 100 years is suddenly under scrutiny. Does that factor in to what you were just describing?
I think absolutely. I think for the majority of the business owners that we have interact with, most of us do not have a clue about the backgrounds of ADA laws, what a CASP means, and the potential legal ramifications of getting involved in this. I think a lot of us, when we first heard that we're sued, we were first frightened, confused. And a lot of these people are immigrant business owners. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time dealing with the U.S. legal system. And that makes them very vulnerable for being preyed on by either the law firms of the plaintiffs or the defense law firms. Jeff, if you can repeat the last part of the question.
Well, what I was really asking about is the extent that somebody walks in, tries to start a business, they rent a space from somebody who's perhaps owns the building. Maybe they're not familiar with the extent of it either, but suddenly you rented a space that you thought was usable for your purposes, and all of a sudden somebody's handing you a lawsuit or even threatening a lawsuit that says the front door wasn't wide enough or something that for most people never factored in. You never thought that you'd be reconstructing large parts of this place that you're renting.
No, so I think only recently that when we exchange hands with the lease, the landlord or the brokers are required to show you the previous CASP inspections. And for older buildings, obviously Fred can help me with this. Older building codes have certain exemptions on this. But a lot of times it's the difference of a few degrees of slope that could cause a violation, or some doors, the way they open, or how wide the door is, does it have screen or anything like that? That will factor in. But a lot of the times, again, I think I need Fred to help me on this. The business just couldn't do much about it because the potential cost is just way too high.
Yeah, it just strikes me, Tony, that these are the businesses that are the most vulnerable. I mean, it sounds like you're getting a triple whammy here. Many of the business owners are new to the American legal system. You're just now rolling out of the pandemic, and these are the kind of businesses that were hit hardest by the pandemic. And now you're getting slapped with a lawsuit that's going to cost you X thousand number of dollars. I understand, and I would understand why. I understand that you and other business owners are beginning to organize. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So it all started with ourselves and our neighbors in the city of Palo Alto were getting hit at the same time. And when we were served the documents, they all claimed that the plaintiff had visited us months ago. So our first thing was to check our surveillance cameras and see if we can see this individual. And most of us don't keep video records that long. I would think that's a strategy that was implemented by the law firm, the plaintiff's law firm, to make sure that we couldn't get evidence of any kind on this. But we felt this strong feeling that, you know, we were already down by the pandemic and they're kicking us down even further. And there's also another feeling, which is we were kind of alone in this. And the fact is we're not alone. Everyone, almost everyone down the streets, you know, you just knock on the doors and there they are. They're affected just like you. So without talking to these business owners, you would never know. So we thought we will create a platform or a airing off session, if you will, for these business owners to air their frustrations a bit and see how we can help them. And gradually, little by little, we found that a lot of people feel very strongly, very passionate about this. They do not want to settle. So we're trying to figure out how is it feasible and economical for us to do this as a group. So it will be safe and saves money and do this right.
And how do people get in contact? You have a formal organization now, yes?
You can say that. Okay. We're kind of ragtag group still.
How do they get in touch with you?
So we have a website set up. Anyone can check it out and fill in a contact form, and we'll reach out to you. The website is BayAreaSmallBusinessCoalition.com. Everything's spelled out. I know it's a hassle, but that's the best we can do so far. We're all business owners. We're doing this on our free time for free for everyone. But I think we had a lot of good advice and good skilled people, specialists that can help us on this and move this forward together.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Joining me as co-host tonight is Dean Johnson. The Americans with Disabilities Act created a necessary and common sense framework to help remove barriers and ensure every American has access to public and private spaces. Very few people would disagree. But a few individuals have been sending out letters or filing lawsuits against small businesses, banking many hundreds of thousands of dollars or more and going after vulnerable businesses. How can we balance the needs of our disabled neighbors that they gain access to do business with the rest of us, while at the same time curtailing the abuse that endangers the survival of far too many small businesses? Tonight's guests, Redwood City Attorney Catherine Moore, Frederick Lustenberger, a certified access specialist, and Tony Hahn, the operation manager at Thai Pan Restaurant in Palo Alto, have a lot to say about that issue. We're hoping you join us to say even more. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in the conversation. You know, I'm going to open this up to all of our guests. We've been talking a bit about claims and lawsuits, some of which are frivolous, some of which are just plain unfair. How widespread are these frivolous lawsuits? Kate?
We're seeing quite a bit of them. As I said, it's the same law firm. It's the same plaintiff or one of about three plaintiffs. And after the pandemic and the restaurants opened back up is when they started up again. It was very quiet during the panic or the pandemic, obviously, because businesses were shut down. But then suddenly after that is when we started seeing a flurry of them coming in with basically the complaint that is filed is the same. And what I mean, the complaint is the document filed in court, which is always filed in federal court in my experience. And there's no novelty to it. It basically just changes the names and the dates and the facts. And that's what we're seeing coming in. I'm sure Tony's probably seen the same type of complaint.
Yeah, so the first thing, like I said, we did after we were served is we look at PACER. And from our calculations, for one plaintiff, which is the most notorious one to hit us, he files about more than 100 lawsuits a month, just in 2021 alone. So that was very jarring. And if you look into each of the complaints, the languages are all very vague and all very similar. I mean, 99% of these claims are identical, wordings and everything. And they specifically, during this time, complaints about outdoor seating. which is the only way that the businesses, the restaurants specifically, can make a buck at this time. So there's some gray area in terms of, oh, these are not permanent structures, so you shouldn't be sued by that. But it's an easy target because most of these businesses don't know the specifics about, in certain areas you have to have how many of ADA tables. Well, businesses are trying to get all their furniture out so it can get customers. So they see this as an opportunity, I guess. And so most of us, most of the restaurants, at least in our group, got hit with this. But of course, in the complaint, they have this language where, since we found there's barriers like this, there must be more barriers further down. So that's where the General Order 56 come in, where they allowed what's called a joint site inspection, where you had a plaintiff's law firm and their specialists come to your business and go through your entire business to check if there's actually any other barriers. And each barrier, if I was remember correctly, would cost you $4,000.
You mentioned that you checked PACER, which of course is the federal court docketing system that's open access. You mentioned that very few people seem to be filing 100 cases or so a month. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, does it appear that people are actually making a living out of just filing these claims?
Oh, I think absolutely. This type of lawsuits isn't new. It has been going around in all other states before. It's just that within California, we have all these nice accommodating laws that help to facilitate a certain loophole, if you will, to make it become an industry. So that's why it is so easy and more notorious to file in the state of California. And I've heard there has been effort to reform this, maybe giving a grace period or sanction the serial litigants, but no actual efforts, no actual results has been made.
KALW and Your Legal Rights has been sharing legal information with listeners for 40 years. If you listen to us and have never become a member, now is the time. Please consider joining KALW right now. Any amount of money, whatever level you want to give, makes a big difference. And it's a relationship that you will value. A broad membership base is the foundation for everything KALW does. We want to grow that foundation. That's why it's so important to bring new people to local public radio. Help us continue providing this tremendous resource either by calling at 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. kalw.org/donate. Thank you. Appears we have a caller in queue, but Dean, do you want to jump in quickly?
Yeah, Fred, you know, this is a pretty grim story we've been hearing from Kate and Tony, but I think you've told us that there's some help on the way for small business owners. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm sorry to cut you off, Fred, but your audio is so bad. I think we need to find a better answer. Is there anyone that could tell us, is there any help on the way? Or is there something that can be done? Kate, you seem to have some ideas on things that might fix it.
I do. Several years ago, the California legislature did try to make an attempt to help small businesses in terms of changing the statutory damages. And so there are ways to reduce the exposure of what those statutory damages would be from certain examples from 4,000 to 2,000 or even down to 1,000. But the point I want to make is that that's still a lot of money for a small business, whether it's $1,000 three times, $2,000 three times, plus then you're also having to pay for the attorney's fees and costs. And costs, of course, are what it costs to file the lawsuit, serve the lawsuit. So it was an attempt to help, but it hasn't really panned out. As Tony was talking about, you know, serial litigants, those stays are only available if you're in state court. And these lawsuits are all filed in federal court for the reasons to avoid those self-help kinds of things that were passed by the legislature. Plus, the federal courts have a very tight timeline that they push these cases through. They don't linger. So it's a much more advantageous forum venue for the plaintiffs to be in. But I've done a lot of analysis and thinking on these cases. And, you know, there's, unlike any other statute, there's no opportunity for the small business to cure the problem before they're immediately slapped with a lawsuit. And so think of, you know, building code violations or, you know, for example, you know, in a health inspection, well, they come in, they do an inspection. Hey, this is not up to par. It doesn't meet the standards. You need to fix this. Okay, great. I mean, because our system is all about notice. Think about due process. And that notice to the business owner is lacking in the ADA or in the UNRU Act. But it's the UNRU Act that I'm most concerned about and most an advocate for amending the statute. The idea, as I said, there is a way to balance the interests of disabled people, persons with the interests of small businesses. And that is, hey, if you have a violation, you have a problem, the property, the individual is denied access, well, then the statute as a prerequisite before you could file a lawsuit should be that you have to give the business owner notice and an opportunity to cure that problem, which would really fall in line with, as I said, as a country, our idea about due process. And then, you know, if the business owner refuses to make the changes or whatever, then the plaintiff can go ahead and file their lawsuit because they have met that prerequisite.
And just pinch-hitting for Frederick here for a moment while we're having some sound difficulties, our listeners might like to know that there is actually a tax credit to bring your business into compliance. It's IRS Form 8826, the Disabled Access Credit. So there's some immediate help for you right there. I understand it's a one-page form. If you're a small business person out there, you might go for it.
You know, that does beg the question. Some of these folks go directly to filing a lawsuit, and the first that the business owner might hear is months later after the person's been there. No comment. They get no contact and they get a lawsuit. Is there any way to compel them to anything, whether it's arbitration, mediation, something to bring them to the table? And does that help any?
So not in the federal court, in the state court, but again, as I said, they're not filed there. Generally, you need to be very cognizant of some very short timelines. So as soon as you are served with a lawsuit of this nature, you generally have 21 days to respond to the complaint. It could be up to 30 days if the lawsuit was subserved, but basically you have 21 days. And I would urge anyone served with any lawsuit like that to reach out to an attorney immediately to respond. Generally, the way that they have been working, at least in the cases that we've been handling, is to move them as quickly as possible, because you, the client, you, the business owner, are simply paying for the longer it goes on, you're paying for the other person's fees and costs, and they can continue to rack up the bill. So you move quickly as you can to resolve the injunctive relief portion of the claim. I generally encourage my clients to get CASP inspections and remediate the property, and then resolve the injunctive portion of the claim, and then basically move to settle the monetary damages as quickly as possible.
Tony, with the consortium that you've put together, mm-hmm. is there any resource to perhaps have somebody update these businesses periodically so that as conditions change, as regulations change, people are brought up to date, they could have CASP inspections before anybody is facing a lawsuit or a claim?
I would think so. We build this group in mind a few steps. The first step is to protect the businesses that are already being sued. And then once we gather the expertise, the second step will be getting to our neighbors, advising them on how to prevent this from ever happening to them. So our group has been curating a very systematic approach on this. And we have our own CASP inspectors. We have an attorney who's willing to help us fight this. And obviously, we are doing the best we can to organize our groups and communications through our website. So there's stepping stones put in place, but we just hope that the businesses can help us to reach out to us, because we don't know how many people are interested in this matter, but we think there's more than what we let on.
We talked a little bit about forcing arbitration. Is this one of the things that you would suggest as a fix to some of the problems, Kate?
I think it could be a mechanism included in some reforms of the Unruh Act. It's certainly, if after you've given the person alleging denial of equal accessibility notices, for example, serves notice on that business, and they then are afforded an opportunity to cure, I think it would certainly be something that should be considered, because the number of lawsuits that are filed in federal court, I'm not a judge, but I just knowing the numbers, I would anticipate they're devoting a lot of resources to managing this caseload of getting these cases through. So, yes, I think that would be a fantastic idea of resolving cases and trying to free up some of the court's resources, which we all know have been strained for quite some time.
Well, if I may jump in on that. So I think up until this point, the court has not been bothered by a lot of these ADA lawsuits, because the way they present them to the small businesses is that you got to settle. So if you settle out of the court, judges would never hear about there's a serial litigant out there. There's a problem. So there are so many of these little mechanisms that these people employ to pressure the small businesses to settle. And even the defense law firm sometimes would tell you that, you know, if you do your calculation, there's no chance for you to win. So why do you fight? You just settle for certain amounts, and that will mediate that, and that's it. And for some businesses, I think that's a ideal way or economic way to do. But for a lot of our friends and neighbors, we feel that's not right.
You know, we're down to seconds, but I wanted to ask everybody one final question, and please keep it very brief. But do we all agree that the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Unruh Act were necessary they're both good ideas. They're needed reforms. It's just that they're set up in a way that it's being abused.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, absolutely.
And before we end, I wanted to give everybody about a minute. Unfortunately, I can't give you more, but a minute or so for any closing thoughts. Tony, you want to jump in and go first? No more than a minute.
Sure. So I think we have to reform the law in California. And there has been other reforms in states like Arizona, where there are very simple steps we can put into place. For example, grace periods, like time for remedies depends on the size of the business, or sanctioning the serial litigants. These things, if we're put in place, then this whole problem could dissolve itself. However, we have to be careful because this is a business for a lot of people. So it might become problematic long term. So we have to work together with the disability communities, with our local officials, with our neighbor businesses to help solve this problem together.
Kate, do you want to take about a minute?
Yes, thanks, Jeff. So I would simply emphasize as a defense attorney that if you are served with any kind of a lawsuit or you become aware of it, to seek legal advice immediately. It is a scary process, and you do want to have someone in your corner helping you to make the best decisions for yourself, whether it's settling the case or to defend the case, which often comes down to a cost-benefit analysis for those individuals.
Fred, do you want to take a minute or less?
Providing my audio is coming through.
It's great right now. You're 10 seconds down.
Okay. Yeah, just remember, if you're a small business owner and you're a tenant in a space owned by a landlord, you may have shared liability, whereas the parking, the entrance, restrooms, if they were there before you leased it, may actually be the responsibility of the landlord. So that might be something you can consider.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, where we're all focused on the Americans with Disabilities Act. We all agree it's needed. Most who look at it seeing abused, how do we fix it without making life more difficult for folks now overcoming disabilities? Our guests tonight have been Redwood City Attorney Catherine Moore, Frederick Lustenberger, a certified access specialist, and Tony Hahn, the operations manager of Taipan Restaurant in Palo Alto. And tonight's co-host, Dean Johnson. Our final guest tonight has been all of you. Tonight's show was produced by Dean Johnson and yours truly. Next week, we take another look at the evolving world of cryptocurrency. We are developing future shows on the rights of children at school, where to go if your loved ones develop the dependency on controlled substances. Best of all, we take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks once again to tonight's guests. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. And back home at the controls, Joanne Marr. Thank you, be safe, and have a great night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.